This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Meghna Chakrabarty. The cleanup of Boston Harbor took more than a decade, but it made a polluted body of water a whole lot cleaner.
This effluent has been treated. All the bacteria has been killed, and it is about to make its journey down the 9.5-mile outfall out to Massachusetts Bay.
Now we can do more than just look at the harbor. We can actually swim in it again.
I had an awesome swim, and just coming around that bend and seeing this Boston skyline and just, oh my God, I'm going to make it. I'm going to actually swim 8 miles.
That was Deer Island Administrator John Viteri and Waltham resident Elaine Howley, interviewed as part of WBUR's summer series on Boston Harbor. Today's installment can be heard this afternoon on All Things Considered. But while Boston Harbor has been cleaned up, water pollution on Cape Cod is an increasing problem. Over the decades, population growth has exploded on the Cape, but septic systems haven't kept up. That's creating a toxic brew in many Cape Cod ponds and rivers that's killing off fish and making a slimy mess of some of the Cape's best swimming spots. Fixing this situation will cost billions. Many Cape Cod communities say they don't have the money, but a lawsuit filed yesterday may force the EPA to clean up this mess. Katie Zesma is a contributor to the New York Times, and she recently wrote about the Cape's water pollution program. She's here on the Radio Boston studio today, and welcome back to Radio Boston, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
So, Katie, you wrote a pair of stories recently, one about the overall water problems on the Cape and one about your own personal experience going to this bay in Orleans on the Cape and finding this big surprise. Tell us what this bay looked like when you got there.
Well, when I got there, the bay looked pristine. It was a beautiful morning on Cape Cod. The sun was shining, the boats were bobbing in the water, and everything looked fine until you approach the shore and you see a lot of seaweed. And then once you actually step into the water, my legs were just coated with seaweed. It was sticky. It felt like walking on wet lettuce.
And I think in the story also, besides that wet lettuce, which is such a visual, you talked about you initially thought maybe old newspapers had blown onto the shore.
Yes, the seaweed had kind of dried up and it looked like newspaper. It looked like balled up white newspaper almost that had gotten on shore, and it was seaweed that had just been in the sun for a while and had dried out.
And was starting to look like old crumpled newsprint.
Exactly, like someone had just tossed it over there.
Have you been to that part of the Cape before to sort of give a before after comparison of whether this is a worsening problem?
Well, it has been worsening over a number of years. It may not be readily available, readily noticeable year after year, but it is getting worse, and it's always worse than this time of year in August, when it gets warm. The seaweed can start to stink, and beaches can smell really, really bad.
And as we'll talk about later, a lot of this is this nitrogen overload in the waters. Mix in the warm temperatures you just talked about, mix in a little sunlight, and you get a pretty nasty mixture down there.
You do. Once the clouds come in and the nitrogen bubbles up, there can be fish kills. There can be that rotting seaweed that people are talking about. And I've been told that anecdotally, people have been heard that some people have left the Cape on vacation because they just thought it smelled too bad.
Really?
Yes.
It was even too much to put up with.
Yes.
Katie, summer can seem so short in New England, and people so look forward to those Cape Cod ponds and bays to swim and fish and kayak and canoe. And I wonder if, based on your reporting, you began to think that maybe we aren't going to be able to count on all those pristine ponds and bays if this problem isn't fixed.
Well, it's an interesting problem. People have said that they worry about property values. People worry about shellfishing because the algae chokes out all oxygen and life is not able to go there anymore. But it's an interesting problem because each bay and inlet is affected differently. There are bays that are just choked with seaweed that have septic systems that are draining right down into them that don't flush very well. When next door, there can be a bay that looks pristine because it flushes well and there's not an overwhelming amount of wastewater running into it.
And your story, I believe, said that there's at least 60 ponds and estuaries on the Cape now choked by this kind of algae and seaweed.
Yes.
And Well, as we said, we'll talk later about why this is happening. For now, listeners, if you have been on the Cape lately and you have seen this, give us a call. What have you seen in the ponds that you often go to? Is there a favorite swimming hole you have on the Cape that you used to be clean and pristine and now you find it mixed with the kind of slimy lettuce and dried up old newspaper-like algae that Katie just described? Let us know your experience on the Cape this summer. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Give us a call. We also have in the studio to help us talk about what's happening and how we could fix it, Cynthia Liebman. She's an attorney for the Conservation Law Foundation, which filed a lawsuit yesterday against the EPA trying to force them to address this issue. And Paul Nedzwicki, he's executive director of the Cape Cod Commission. This is a regional planning group, and it's also a defendant in the lawsuit. So Cynthia and Paul, welcome to both of you to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Could you give us an Cynthia, maybe you, actually I'll let you pick who could answer this best. Why is this happening? Why are we seeing this kind of algae and growth and nitrogen overload in the waters?
I can handle that question. It's due to an overload of nitrogen primarily from wastewater, from human-generated sources, including septic systems, wastewater treatment plants, and also runoff from the roads, from polluted rainwater. And that all travels very quickly through the sandy soil and through the underground aquifers right into the bays and coastal rivers where it causes the problems.
So this is septic systems, cesspools, I assume it's lawn fertilizer, animal waste, all those things that end up in the water.
Those are all part of the problem. Studies have shown that up to 70% of the problem is from septic systems. So wastewater is really the primary component that needs to be addressed.
And septic systems are really, they're really predominate on the Cape. I mean, I understand they're about 85%. Katie's story may have said this. 85%, I think, of the houses on the Cape have septic systems.
Yes,
that's correct.
And the alternative would be, if you don't have septic, what's the better option?
Well, there are a lot of different technologies that can remove nitrogen from wastewater.
You know, we have a caller already, and I think I'd like to hear from this person because this is a Cape homeowner. This is Susan from Andover. Susan, thank you for calling Radio Boston.
Hi. This is a very interesting subject. We have a house in Orleans. It's on the Nauset Inlet. And I think I'd read your guest article earlier this summer, and it was very interesting to us. And one of the things we noticed this year was that there were no mussels. Normally, the whole edge of the inlet is covered in mussels, particularly at low tide. You can see them and you can gather them. There were none this year. And although I didn't notice an excess of seaweed or kelp in this area, and it seems to get a pretty good, you know, difference between high tide and low tide, so it seems like it's flushed out, I wondered if this issue of pollution of the Cape waters has to do with this mussel disappearance.
Actually, before we try to get an answer to that, Katie, you mentioned possible impact on shellfishing, and I think this is getting at why this is so important. This is not just that all of a sudden your pond is not so pretty anymore. It's possible impact on fishing, on tourism. Is that part of the issue here?
Yeah, absolutely. What nitrogen chokes out eelgrass, which is it's a grass. It looks like grass. It's just underwater that specifically bay scallops like to live in. So when that gets choked out, the scallops often leave, and it also deprives these estuaries of oxygen, which is what the shellfish live on as well.
So Paul Nedzwicki, executive director of the Cape Cod Commission, your group is a defendant in this lawsuit. If we know the science so clearly, if we know that this problem of poor septic will lead to these problems in the ponds, why hasn't the Cape fixed it?
Well, we're still working on the science. The UMass Dartmouth SMAS program has been working on the Massachusetts Estuaries Program, which is giving us some really good science so that we can determine what the total maximum daily loads are that are allowed in these bays and estuaries. They've been working on that for almost a decade now, and we're still in some watersheds waiting for that science to come in. Of the 57 major coastal watersheds on the Cape, 46 have already been identified as being nitrogen sensitive. And about half of those have the science completed on them so far.
Nitrogen sensitive, meaning they're already a little bit imperiled.
Yes.
Okay. So, all right, so we see that there is a problem. Even if the science is still coming in, there is a problem. Why have we let the Cape stay so sewer dependent and not upgrade it to modern technology?
Well, it's septic dependent.
Septic
about 15%
dependent.
Of the Cape is sewered currently. And in order to move beyond that, to look at other types of technologies, including centralized collection systems, you have 15 different towns on the Cape that have been approaching this problem in 15 different ways. And so that has slowed. So in certain towns where there's been a lot of leadership, there's been a lot of progress made. For instance, the town of Chatham has a plan to sewer the entire town. And they started planning for this financially 10 years ago by retiring debt service and leaving enough room in their debt cap to cover this without going forward with an override.
They started planning for it 10 years ago?
Yeah, planning for it.
Have they actually done it yet?
They just voted the plan forward. So that plan is moving forward in Chatham. And because Chatham was out in front on this, they were also able to qualify for some federal money, some federal stimulus money now. So they actually have the best financing deal on the Cape. Other communities are not as far ahead.
I was running through this morning some Cape towns that had done anything on this. I think Orleans has drafted a plan that would cost $150 million. Barnstable votes this November whether to finance a $265 million plan. North Falmouth, I think $650 million, which would be by far the most money they've ever spent on almost any kind of major infrastructure project. These are big bucks, and I assume that these towns don't have these at the ready.
They certainly don't have them at the ready. And what we're looking at is the issue that has been described accurately is the biggest environmental issue facing the Cape today, and it collectively will lead to the biggest capital construction project that the Cape has ever seen, anywhere from $3 to $5 billion, depending on whether we approach this regionally or whether we allow 15 towns to plan independently.
Listeners, if you are a frequent visitor to the Cape and you have seen this kind of problem, algae and eelgrass or lack of eelgrass and sort of the slimy seaweed that Katie Zesma of the New York Times described, give us a call. We want to see what's been changing in the Cape towns you visit. Let's hear again from Cynthia Liebman, an attorney for the Conservation Law Foundation, which yesterday sued the EPA for this problem. Cynthia, you know, we've just heard from Paul, these are expensive. The towns may not have the money. Are you trying to say, too bad, you need to do this, you have to be forced to find a way to do it?
There are technological solutions at hand, and there also is funding available. So it's critical that the cleanup move forward. And in a place like Cape Cod, where tourism makes up over 30% of the economy, the cost of doing nothing over the long run is going to be far greater to Cape Cod than taking action now to fix the problem.
You said that money could be available. Where would these towns get this money?
There's funding available from a variety of sources. As Paul mentioned, there's federal funding, there's state funding, and that can be accessed particularly well when communities have wastewater cleanup plans in place. One thing that hasn't been addressed so far, though, in our conversation is the fact that EPA has largely been sitting on the sidelines. That's the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. And they're a key partner in terms of funding as well as regulatory frameworks to solve this problem.
So as I understand it, your suit says that the EPA has failed to enforce the Clean Water Act. Its job is to say we can't just let these towns go ahead and pollute, even if they say they don't have the money right now. We just can't let this go on.
That's correct. Essentially, the Conservation Law Foundation and the Coalition for Buzzards Bay are challenging EPA's approval of these pollution budgets, the total maximum daily loads. EPA has created an erroneous definition of septic systems and wastewater treatment plants, treating them in a way that they're not subject to regulation. And that's allowed EPA to remain on the sidelines when really EPA is an important partner that needs to be part of the solution.
We also have a caller who's from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, but is actually originally from the Cape. So I'd like to hear his perspective, too. This is Ian from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And hi, Ian. Thanks for calling Radio Boston.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Yeah, I spent 22 years on the Cape. I grew up there, and back to that algae seaweed problem, I felt this has happened every so 2 or 3 years. I want to say it's almost like a bloom or something, and it does stink the beaches up. But I also want to say the EPA doesn't regularly enforce much to do with the fishing or the water treatment. I see a lot of people. A lot of parties in the lakes? Yeah, kids come down to the party, they trash it. They, I've seen cars thrown in the lakes before. No one really regulates what's going on down there. It's the madhouse.
Well, you know, one thing you do bring up, Ian, is that, you know, there's a lot of people on the Cape these days. We've seen a lot of development, a lot of population growth. Paul Nidzwicki, Executive Director of the Cape Cod Commission, maybe you could speak to that really a lot of this is due to population growth and towns that haven't been able to keep up infrastructure-wise with all these new people and the demands they bring.
Yeah, most of it is due to population growth and the fact that septic systems were never intended to remove nitrogen, and all that nitrogen is pooling together and creating these degraded situations out in our coastal waters. That's clear. I'd like to get back to the expense of this, though. This is really the pressing issue when people ask why something hasn't been done. I mean, the federal government has been out of paying for capital wastewater infrastructure really since the Reagan administration in a meaningful way. And that, in fact, the largest treatment plant on the Cape is in the town of Barnstable, and that plant was constructed in the late 70s when the federal government was paying 95% of those construction costs, and the state kicked in another 3%. That kind of funding is just not available today. So what you're looking at on the backs of households on Cape Cod now is a potential expense that is 4 to 5 times what the greater Boston area paid for the Boston Harbor cleanup, where they had existing infrastructure that needed to be repaired. There's very little infrastructure in place on the Cape today.
Paul Nesvicki of the Cape Cod Commission, it sounds like you're saying these Cape communities had an opportunity to have an enormous amount of this cost subsidized in recent decades, but they didn't do that.
Well, it really would go back to the 70s. I mean, even if you look at the Boston Harbor cleanup project, that project, when instead of applying for a waiver to secondary treatment, they had an opportunity to apply for grants. They didn't qualify. The federal government got out of that the business of funding capital wastewater infrastructure. And so we need a commitment from the federal government as well as the state government to help us pay for this very costly solution.
And of course, now your group has been sued. So now this is it's much more urgent. It's not just that it has to happen, or it's not just that it would like to happen, it's that it has to happen.
Well, it does have to happen, and we have been working hard for over 5 years. Barnstable County created a water protection collaborative, the Cape Cod Water Protection Collaborative, 5 years ago to look at this particular issue and to lead education on this issue and outreach efforts. And they've been very successful in doing that, but it's very difficult when you're dealing with 15 independent municipalities and you're dealing with 57 watersheds, 46 of them are nitrogen impaired. And these watersheds cross town boundaries. Two-thirds of the watersheds on Cape Cod cross town boundaries. So trying to get municipalities to work together collaboratively in order to answer those problems in these shared watersheds has proven to be very difficult.
So Cynthia Lieben of the Conservation Law Foundation, your group filed the suit. Here's the defendant saying, look, this is a really hard problem. Are you sympathetic to that?
I'd like to go back to actually, the 1970s, the Conservation Law Foundation and Coalition for Buzzards Bay's legal action involving the Cape Cod Commission actually concerns a wastewater cleanup plan that was put out in 1978. And under the Federal Clean Water Act, there's an obligation for that plan to be updated and implemented. And the reason that we have taken a legal action against the Cape Cod Commission is that that hasn't been done. And so for 30 years, the problem has just been getting worse. And meanwhile, the mandates of the Clean Water Act were not fulfilled in order to address wastewater from septic systems and wastewater treatment plants.
So now it's kind of a pay the piper kind of time, it sounds like. We've got to figure it out.
It's critical that this plan be updated and fully implemented. And in terms of what the Cape Cod Commission is doing, acknowledging that there is some activity going on, there is not a comprehensive plan that is going to address the nitrogen pollution to reduce it to the levels that the Clean Water Act mandates in terms of time frames and a clear regulatory framework. That doesn't exist.
Cynthia Lieben, an attorney for the Conservation Law Foundation, which yesterday sued the EPA. Thank you for coming to Radio Boston. And Paul Nesvicki, executive director of the Cape Cod Commission, which is a defendant in the lawsuit that the Conservation Law Foundation filed. Thank you also for coming to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Coming up, high-powered investigative journalism goes local. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.